Hello Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me again this week as we take you through the latest news, analysis, and game action surrounding our Chicago Bulls. I was away on a little mini holiday last weekend, so apologies for not being able to record a show last week, which turned out to be a pretty good one for the Chicago Bulls, who, despite only having a 1-5 record over their last five games, they did have some pretty solid performances against the Nuggets, Pacers, Rockets, even a win against the Knicks, as well as a pretty good performance against the Pelicans too. So there are some things to be concerned about, as there always are with a rebuilding team, but I also think there's been some real positives here as we review the first few weeks of the season. And joining me to talk now about our beloved Chicago Bulls, he's been here the last few weeks, and he happens to be the lone inhabitant of the Jabari Parker Island. He is Mr. Frederick Pfeiffer. Fred, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's lonely out here, brother. How are you doing, man? I got the whole island to myself.
Well, look, I'm pretty cozy here. There's a lot of Jabari haters, I guess. So there's plenty amongst us, but not necessarily much fanfare for Jabari at the moment.
Which I don't really understand. I got to be honest with you. I mean, he puts up a 20-point game against the Pelicans, arguably one of his best offensive games of the year, probably, without a doubt, his best offensive game of the year. 13 rebounds. Gets to the line 8 times. I thought he was fantastic overall. And yet, if you go to Bulls Twitter, all you do is see the highlight of the 2 or 3 mistakes that he's made. It's so frustrating to me. I mean, I understand it. People want to be right. People don't like him for whatever reason. He doesn't always give 100% defensively. No player does, but I think we do notice that he's definitely – he needs to work on that. There's no doubt about it. But as an offensive player, a few guys are more skilled than Jabari Parker. For his size, you know, I wish there was a way this would work out, but even I have come to the realization this will probably be his last year as a Chicago Bull. What say you?
Oh, I'm completely fine with that, Fred, as you could imagine. But let's get straight into this thing, because it's not just you and I, Fred, today. Even though I love your company, we're not alone today. Instead of it just being me and you going back and forth with our usual nonsense, on today's show, we're extremely fortunate to be joined by a great guest, someone you and I both listen to on the airwaves on a regular basis, and I'm sure someone the listeners of this show know all too well. Along with his broadcasting partner, Tom Waddle, he hosts the ever-popular Waddle and Sylvie show on ESPN 1000, taking care of you on your drive home from 2 to 6 p.m. during the week. I'm of course referring to Mark Sylvie Silverman. The man is a passionate Bulls fan. He wants to talk Bulls, and he wants to talk Bulls with us here on Bulls HQ. Sylvie, thanks for jumping on our humble little show, mate.
Well, I can't believe it. I mean, this is history in the making, isn't it? And it just shows you that social media isn't all bad these days, that it could bring people together, and it brought the three of us together on a Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for taking the time out of your Friday night. We really do appreciate that. Obviously, you've put your life on hold to talk with two lunatics here on the podcast, and I'm sure when you were setting out your career plans, you're at the pinnacle of Chicago sports radio at the moment, but I'm sure when you were setting out your career plans, you definitely had in mind to get on a random Bulls podcast and speak to two lunatics. I'm sure you had that in mind.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we've all been there, and this is why we do what we do. Is just because I'm on Chicago radio and Fred does what he does and Mark, you do what you do, it doesn't make the love for the team any less or more. And, you know, it's the one thing I try to strive for on our show is, and I think Fred understands this, is that I always take offense when people think that I form an opinion because I'm on the radio or because, you know, I'm in the quote media, you know, down to my core, I'm just a diehard Bulls fan who wants the best for this team and want this team to win. Out of the, you know, the major 4 or 5 teams that I root for, the Bulls are number one, you know, close second to the Cubs. The Cubs are number two, but the Bulls are that's my team.
Well, I mean, we're going to ask you about that. I wanted to learn a little bit more about where that fandom sort of started, because obviously you're on the radio, you have a professional relationship with the Bulls, but also all the other teams in Chicago. But beyond that, based on what you just outlined there, you are a fan of the team pretty much just like we are. So where does this whole thing sort of start for you? I'm assuming it started as a kid or maybe in later in life, but where did your fandom for this team all begin?
Yeah, as a kid, as a very young kid. So my grandfather was a season ticket holder for the Chicago Bulls in their first season at the International Amphitheater before the Bulls even played at the Chicago Stadium. And later in life, my uncle took over those season tickets, but my grandfather and I would go to all the games. So I started going to games probably in 1975 or 1976. And we had seats on the floor those days. We'd go with two of our neighbors and we had four seats together to sit on the floor. And there were, you know, 5,000-6,000 people. It was right after the Dick Motta Bowls. And so they were just, they weren't very good at this time when I started at least having my first memories of all that. And, you know, it was the Reggie Theus Bowls, the Artis Gilmore Bowls. And I just remember going and falling in love with the excitement level and the noise in the Chicago Stadium and going home and pretending I was Artis Gilmore and Reggie Theus on my Nerf hoop in my bedroom in Skokie. So, and you know, I got in on the ground floor. You get in with a team who stinks. And if you have a love then, you're going to love them at all costs at any time. And, you know, I was just fortunate to love the team in the 70s and then into the early 80s. And then, of course, when Michael was drafted in 84. And then from there, you can only imagine where it went. It just, you know, the Bulls then started selling out games. And my love grew in my senior year of my high school. My senior year in high school, my grandfather and I went to 39 out of 41 regular season games.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, you know, this goes down to my core. This is my roots as a child. And it's truly a love.
So outside of MJ and Scotty, then, who would be on your Mount Rushmore Bulls?
I think you got to put Jerry Sloan there, don't you think, Fred? I mean,
sure. This is more personal to you.
Oh, my favorites?
Yeah, your four favorites outside of it, but don't put those two on there. I mean, that's
it's so hard. I mean,
Kirk Heinrich, Sylvie, is he on there?
What's that?
Kirk Heinrich, is he on there?
Yeah, right, Kirk. Are we going to start that argument between
No. We can put that to bed.
Sylvie, we're simpatico on that one, believe me. Holy cow.
Guys. You know, believe me, I have overloved, and Carmen DeFalco, who's on the radio station, and I used to get into arguments over different Bulls players who throughout the years I have overloved. I had way over the top love for Ben Gordon and used to just yell at people that he was great.
And he was great.
He was great. He could shoot it. And I had a huge love for Andres Nocioni. So, like, with some of the modern and, you know, in more recent times, my two favorite off these last group of teams would be Noah and Rose. And, you know, because of the way the Rose stuff ended, you know, probably if you're going to ask me, hey, in the modern era, since really 2007, 8, 9, in the last decade, who's your favorite Bull? I would probably say Joakim Noah. But, you know, going back to some of those other teams, I loved Kukoc. I loved Horace Grant. It tore me up when the Bulls got, you know, when they had the falling out with Horace Grant, and he went to Orlando. That just killed me because he was everything that we wanted in a Bulls player. He was a guy who just did the dirty work and didn't need to be featured and fit in perfectly as a winning player with Michael and Scotty. So that's a long-winded answer in saying I don't have four guys that I could put up there. There's more than four.
No, I mean, that's fair enough. There's been so many players throughout the history of this team that I guess it's a personal choice, but there's been so many players to love over the years, particularly those defensive-type first players that the city of Chicago typically sort of gravitates towards. So, yeah, I mean, each person has their own list of Mount Rushmore guys, but let's get stuck into the current iteration of Bull Sylvie. And I wanted to talk with you about Fred Hoiberg, because getting you on here, this is probably the topic that was the impetus of getting you on our humble little show here. So I wanted to talk to you about Coach Fred Hoiberg, because it's one of those topics probably the most spoken about amongst Bulls fans at the moment. It's seemingly swinging one way, but I'm probably on the other side of the fence at the moment. But I wanted to talk Hoiberg with you. I know Fred and I disagree on this, but I wanted to get your general take of what you think of Hoiberg as a coach at the moment. What do you think he's been doing well, not so well, and just his general place going forward?
Yeah, look, I always preface everything I say about Hoiberg as to I was on management's side when it was time for a change. And I actually, when they hired Hoiberg, was a big fan of the Hoiberg signing. So this is like, this, like, some people think it's personal with me with Fred Hoiberg, but initially I thought he was everything you wanted as a coach, that he was a modern pace and space coach, that they would get it up the floor and they would shoot it and spread the floor. And he checked all the boxes. He was everything that Tibbs wasn't and kind of what they grew tired of, that he understood what it was to be an NBA player, that he wasn't going to kill all of the players as far as minutes and practice, and he'd relate to them better. He had had coaching experience on a major college level at Iowa State, and he was an assistant general manager under one of my favorite guys in Flip Saunders in Minnesota. So he knew what it was to run a front office. He knew what it was to be a head coach. He knew what it was to be a player in the NBA. And then to me, everything's fallen flat. The criticism that I get to my criticism is that Fred Hoiberg has been done wrong by management. And I can't argue with that. The Bulls have changed this team up a ton, and they haven't given him a ton to work with. But I can't think of anything to gravitate towards as to what Fred Hoiberg does well. I feel like he plays the wrong guys. I feel like the Bulls don't run offense when it's time to get baskets late. It's still ISO ball. And I feel like he doesn't understand that player development is number one, and that I don't feel like a lot of these younger guys have gotten better under him. So, Mark, I don't want to be too hard, but I truly, in my humble opinion, don't feel like he does really anything that great.
I mean, I certainly understand all those points, and I think you've articulated them pretty well there, and certainly better than some of the fans you'll hear speaking about the coach, who, as you can imagine, are pretty hot on this topic at the moment. But look, I don't know if I generally agree with you on the fact that the players haven't necessarily developed. I think we've seen good things from Bobby Portis. We've seen good things from Denzel Valentine. It's hard to say with Larry Markkanen, obviously, because he only had the one season. But even Chris Dunn, I thought he took a step forward last season. So it seems to me like the players that are actually worth a damn have improved under Hoiberg, but I sort of understand what you're saying as well.
Well, and look, I know Fred hates Tibbs. There was a lot of things. There was a lot of things that I loved about Tibbs, and like just through the history of Bulls coaches, the one thing that all the good coaches have done when they first took over, and I'll even throw Scott Skiles in the mix, because as soon as he came, they turned it around. They weren't expected to win, and then next thing you know, they were winning 50 games. Is all these coaches arrive and they establish a culture immediately. Even if not all of the players are coachable, they demand the respect, and they have a presence, whether it's Skiles, whether it's Tibbs, whether it's going back to Doug Collins when he developed a young team, and of course, Phil Jackson. And I feel it's something that Vinny lacked, and I feel it's something that Fred has lacked, where there's no true culture. Like, I don't think there's much presence from Fred Hoiberg, and I wish he was a bigger figure than he is.
I mean, that's tough to argue against. I mean, he's not demonstrative on the sideline. He's not overly passionate on the sidelines like we see our old friend Tibbs used to be, or even most of the coaches around the league. So I certainly get that standpoint of what you're suggesting there. But I don't know. Do you think the perception around Hoiberg is a little bit different if he doesn't come in and starts coaching that squad that the front office perceived to still have championship aspirations? Do you think if the Bulls had been rebuilding, say last season, if that was the first year under Hoiberg, do you think the perception around him would be completely different?
Maybe. It would drive me crazy, though, if he doesn't get the ball to Lauri Markkanen when there's 5 minutes left in the game, and I watched possession after possession of Lauri not even touching the ball. And like, that's something in player development that I saw happen a lot last year. When it was time to win the game, they didn't ever include Lauri Markkanen in working the basketball. Or like when Fred pointed out this year, when Jabari Parker was in defensively and Wendell Carter was on the bench for an important possession, those little things. But look, Mark, you bring up a good point, because just like any player, how it's important to gain confidence early in their rookie season as a player, I think it maybe would have done Fred better if the front office set him up better with that first team. And maybe he would have found confidence quicker, and then it could have gone better. But there's still a lot where I just don't like what I see.
Yeah, well, yeah, just to jump in really quick, the front office did a fine job his first year. That team was 21-12. The second half of the season had four catastrophic injuries to rotation players, which led to a 500 team. And it wasn't a terrible team. I mean, it was on the last legs there with Rose and Noah. And then I disagree completely with the following year. You had Butler, Nico, the great Nico Mirotic, who Mark is one of Mark's favorite players. You had Rondo and Taj. I mean, like, the team wasn't talentless. He should have been better than we ended up. Just I don't buy this with Fred. And I want to go back to one thing that you said about Tibbs, though, really quick, Sylvie, if you don't mind. You know, has the tire fire there in Minnesota changed your opinion about him looking back? Is it possible that maybe the talent here was so great when you had two great interior defenders like Noah and Taj and Rose playing MVP level? Maybe is the story that about Thibodeau being the miracle worker a little bit overstated?
I don't believe so, because look, I saw Lou Alden stand in the corner shooting 22-foot, you know, jumpers under Vinny Del Negro. And then when Tibbs came, Tibbs knew how to utilize him offensively and defensively. And I saw Derrick Rose take leaps and bounds steps. You got to give credit to the players too. But like, they were playing at shooting guard with Ronnie Brewer
Yeah, they had Korver on this team and he wouldn't even play him.
Look, a lot of the minutes, both good and bad, was always something that it never sat well with me. But I always felt like, whether it was Nate Robinson running point or it was the collection of shooting guards that they ended up getting and never could fill with Derrick Rose in the backcourt, that Tibbs always maximized the talent that he had. Believe me, he's not blameless. He did a lot of stupid stuff. And it's accurate what you said, the tire fire in Minneapolis. A lot of it's his doing, and a lot of it is his stubbornness. He doesn't know when to check himself, and that's always been one of his worst attributes. But I still believe he's great at coaching basketball.
So bringing this back to, I guess, the modern day Bulls, we could probably look, Sylvie, Fred and I, we could go on about Tibbs for a long, long time. So let's bring it back to the current day Bulls. And I want to talk about another contentious issue. We've talked Hoiberg, but outside of Hoiberg, the other topic that I guess has Bulls fans all up in arms at the moment is the Jabari Parker experiment. So for me, just to give you an update on basically where I sat on the whole thing, I pretty much hated it the moment it happened. I had no faith in it working out at all, particularly from the fact that the Bulls wanted to force him into small forward, which is a position I just thought he had no chance in playing. As you could imagine, Fred probably thought the opposite. He was very high on Jabari and thought he could revive his career in Chicago. And obviously, Fred wasn't alone in that thought. But obviously, it's early. We're only 12 games into this thing, so things can change. But what are your early season takeaways of the Parker experiment thus far?
I think it's weird all the way around. I mean, I was more with Fred than I was with you about Jabari. I thought they had the room and they haven't gotten creative with making trades to fill that spot with expiring deals or whatever. So I thought, why not sign a guy with room on a one-year tryout? At best, he lives up to what he was supposed to be back in the day. At worst, maybe he shows you at least he's a good enough scorer where you can flip him for something. And yes. I watch him and I you know, it's mind boggling. And I've had Jabari in studio many times when he was in high school, and he was a great kid. I don't understand how he could show no want to play defense. I mean, like, and we say it all the time on the show, Zach LaVine is not a good defensive player. But Zach LaVine tries to play defense, and he's working at it. Jabari Parker seems to have no use to try to play defense. That said, he's got a gift where he can score. And it's a clumsy fit, like you said, Mark. But I'm hoping still that there will be a team who needs a scorer, and maybe he can get hot like Mirotić got hot, and maybe we can get an end of the first round pick. Now that's probably fantasy world, but that's where I'm crossing my fingers at this point.
Really quick, Sylvie, do you see this? I've seen this throughout the years. Some of my favorite players have been offensive-minded, defensively deficient players. Ben Gordon was one. There was a huge swath of Bulls fans I get in these arguments with about, you know, he doesn't play defense. I saw it with Pau Gasol. I saw it, and I'm seeing it with Jabari now. I mean, he puts up a 2013 the other night. He gets to the free throw line eight times, and there's value in that. And all I see are the three mistakes he made over and over on Bulls Twitter. And do you agree with me? Do you see this kind of pervasive, just a bias against offensive first players in among the fan base? Or is that something I'm just imagining?
Well, look, how old are your kids, Fred?
My daughter's 13. My son's 10.
All right. So if you're 10-year-old. I named him
after Ben Gordon, by the way. So.
Let's say Ben had a great day all the way around. Did well at school, listened to you all day, but then you walked up into his room and he was lighting matches and setting paper on fire. What will stick out in your mind the most? Not that he was good all day, but what the hell are you doing playing the matches in your room? Like, and I just think that it's so egregious, those two or three things, what Jabari does or doesn't do, because again, maybe Ben Gordon wasn't a good defensive player, but Ben Gordon would compete. Maybe Pau Gasol wasn't a good, and like Pau would give up at times too, but at least he blocked shots. Jabari's more like a boozer type defender, where simply he would just be standing frozen, yelling at someone, and you'd have no clue why he's over there. So I think those are the reasons why those errors stick out more.
Do you feel he's going to have, once Laurie comes back, they're not even going to try him at the three. I mean, Holiday has just played 325 minutes, and he's got to the free throw line two times in nine games. Two times in nine games. And I'm just like, what? I'd rather see, you know, Jabari fake it at the three than put up with this anymore. But, you know, I'm
right.
What do you think?
I mean, and this is what Mark and I were talking about on Twitter, and that I think initiated was my tweet about, my tweet was about Chicago sports and about, I can't believe Coach Quinville could get fired, that Joe Maddon's on the hot seat, and like Fred's okay, and he's playing Justin Holiday. And I get it that they don't totally all relate. I was hot the night before, and Mark, to go into one thing that I wanted to explain or just kind of voice my opinion on, what I say about my show with Justin Holiday is, during this rebuild and during player development, and anything that I watch sports-wise, I always ask myself, what's the point? Like, what's the point in any of this? You know, what's the point? So when I say, and I ask myself about the Bulls, what's the point here and what's the point there? To me, what's the point in playing Justin Holiday? Amen. Justin Holiday isn't good enough to get you anything on the trade market. We saw that last year, or else they would have traded him. And Justin Holiday isn't good enough to be a part of the rebuild. So what's the point in him taking up 47 minutes or any minutes for that matter? I'd rather them call up a bunch of G League guys, try to take long shots and mine for gold. And maybe you find guys who will stick on the NBA roster, because I just think we know who Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday are. And I think they're taking valuable minutes away from, in this case, Hutchinson, and some other players who I think could be playing.
I mean, that's a fair point. I don't necessarily disagree with too much of that, but that sinks into the next question, which I wanted to ask you, probably the final one that we will bring up for you before we let you get away. And that's just management in general. I'd like to get your take on that, but it sort of segues into what you just talked about there. If we're asking what's the point of Justin Holiday being here in general? And I guess the question is, well, who brought in Justin Holiday and why is he on the roster?
Right.
So talk to me about that more holistically, and I'll be interesting to hear about you, you know, from you, what you think management have done over the last, say, last 18 months, let's call it, since the rebuild sort of kicked off. What have you made of their draft picks? How have you sort of assessed their roster build? Obviously, you've been pretty clear of what your thoughts about bringing guys like Lopez and Holiday have been, but just expand on that point and just bring it home with the team at large, particularly with some of these younger pieces.
Yeah. Like, I think there's good and bad. And I just think this is what Fred and I argue about the most on the radio and on Twitter and everything like that is, believe me, I love John Paxson. John Paxson, you know, made my childhood better because of him as a basketball player and the accomplishments he had. What John Paxson did taking over for a legendary general manager was really good. The Bulls were in a wasteland when John Paxson took over the team. And John Paxson built not one, but two teams that you could be proud of in the way that they could compete. That first team under Scott Skiles and, you know, with Ben Gordon and Luol Deng and Kirk Heinrich and everything. It was a fun team. It didn't have a chance to win the title, but it was good. And then the 2010 team, and he was the one who gave Tibbs the first coaching chance. He gets credit for that. He was the one who picked Derrick Rose ahead of Beasley. He gets credit for that. He was the one who traded for Luol Deng on draft day. He gets credit for all that. He was the one who took Noah when everyone made fun of him and wanted other guys. But I just think that when it's time, it's time. And a lot of good people in front offices say, hey, 10 years is enough, even when you've accomplished a lot. And I just, and Mark, I think you were getting at it a little bit. It's always been the front office that's put this team in this position. And exactly. I could zoom in and I could say the Jimmy trade was really good. The Jimmy trade was really good. It was time to get rid of him, but they were in that spot because of where this front office brought them. So they had to trade Jimmy.
Correct.
Now they maximized it. They maximized getting rid of Jimmy, and I think it's going to be really good. But I just feel like when you've been doing it since what now, Fred? 03?
Yeah.
304. When it's been 15 years, and look, there are a lot of reasons why you don't get to where you want to go, but all front offices have different reasons why you don't get to where you want to go. When it's been a decade and a half and you've only been to one conference finals, you've never been to an NBA championship round, you haven't won a championship, that it's just time to let someone else have a shot at all this. And I feel like under Jerry Reinsdorf, they're too complacent with the front offices. And they're going to, Garrett Pax are going to get an opportunity to hire their fifth coach here. And I don't think it's fair that a front office who's only been to a conference finals once gets a chance to hire their fifth coach.
I mean, that's as good as an answer I could have hoped for, and pretty much sums up my entire feeling about the situation. But Sylvie, look, we've probably kept you long enough here, mate, but I've got one last question that I need to ask, and it's probably my most important question that I need to ask you, and I want to just get your insights from your studio. And when you see your producer sort of flagging down to you that we've got C-Red Fred on the line, what are your immediate thoughts when you get that call that Fred's on another line? What are you thinking at that point?
I think you know how your mind could go a million thoughts in one. It's kind of that. It's like, oh, crap. Oh, good. Oh, what's he going to say today? You know, but it's always I love it because it keeps it loose and we bust Fred's balls, but he cares about the team. You know, he's also a lunatic, Mark, as you know,
of course.
So, you know, but smart. And that's why, like, I would take time like on a Friday night at 9:30 Chicago time, 2:30 Australian time to talk to both of you. Like to me, it's amazing, Mark, that, you know, you're 31 or 32. I forgot what you said. And you live in Australia, but yet you know this team inside and out. You live in freaking Australia. And I think it's amazing. And it's just, and it's so cool now how small the world is, you know, that we're sitting on here, three of us in different spots. And we could all talk about the same thing and everything that we want. We all want the same common goal. We want the Bulls to be great. But it's just so cool that here you come from your background in Australia. And here's the delirious, you know, C-Red Fred. And you know, here's me. But yet, we could all get together on a podcast. And that's why, like, whether you say, well, our small show or not, like, I don't think it's small. I think your love for the team is great and big. And that's why I would take time anytime to talk to you guys.
Well, look, mate, I really do appreciate those words. It was more than kind of you to say all that stuff. But like I said a little bit earlier, Fred and I, Fred and I could probably spend hours talking with the Bulls, but we don't want to put you through all that. But we do appreciate you taking the time out of your Friday evening to join us. And we really hope we can do it again sometime down the track. But like I said before, thanks for joining us. We really do appreciate it.
If one day you get to Chicago and I knew you were tweeting about it, we'll do like a watch party or something. Whether the Bulls are on the road, we'll all get together. We'll have beers and we'll just yap about the Bulls. And
that'd be awesome.
And Mark, you're always welcome when you... When you come to town, you know who to look up and we'll take care of you.
No worries. And likewise, if you ever get down to Australia, mate, I'll take you to an actual football game where they actually kick the ball.
Nice. Football, right? Yeah, Fred, you're the best, man. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Sylvie. Thanks, you're the best, too. Forward to getting down there one of these days. Talk to you later, brother.
So thanks again to Sylvie for joining us. Fred, we're pretty lucky to have someone of Sylvie's caliber there. And the fact that he's... His status in Chicago, it's like I said before, it's pretty humbling for him to join our little show here. But what did you make of that? We were pretty lucky to get him on, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare to get someone. He is definitely in Chicago, this city, one of the iconic figures in terms of sports radio. I'm not sure if you're aware. I know you have some sense of it in Australia, but unless you're really here, I mean, this guy and Tom Waddle are dominating or have dominated the scene here on the afternoon drive. Basically destroying the other competitor, which is the Score 670, you know, for the last, I think it's been over 5 years at least. It might even be longer than that. And the thing I love about the guy, he's so down to earth and he's really from this city, you know, and it really shines through. He loves these teams. He has a genuine love for it. You know, Tom is a football hero here, but he's not really from the town. You know, he doesn't have a love for the teams. He's still beloved in the city. But Sylvie's kind of unique in that way, that he's really a guy who's a local guy who's made it great. And I can't say enough great stuff about him. He's been super nice to me. Every time, you know, I have a thought or I get on the show, they get me right through because I have a full-time job and it's always fun to chat with him. And I know he, you know, appreciates, although he's joking around, I know he appreciates anytime I'm on that show, I'm bringing something. You know, it's going to be an angle, a thought, usually from a positive perspective. I definitely disagree with his last thought on the front office. I mean, when you get back down, when you step away and look at it, I didn't want to mention it to him because he's already heard it from me about 1,000 times and what would be worthwhile to
I
say.
I definitely wouldn't allow you to get in. Notice how I cut you off at the end.
to defend him? I mean, when you get down to it, you look, the first team All-NBA, the Bulls drafted two first team All-NBA guys and Noah and Rose. And we all know the story. They, you know, deteriorated into the point where Noah's not even a league and Rose has kind of had a resurgence recently, but still, you know, that's the sad story here. And getting over that and in the contracts that they sign is going to take time. I believe we're in the right direction. And I don't see anybody out there, especially St. Hinkie, that I would rather have running this thing. So I know I'm on a line. I'm on two islands, I guess, at the same time. I'm on Jabari Island. And Pax Gar Island, maybe not Gar. I don't count him, but Pax Island is kind of a weird place to be. I'm straddling two islands.
Well, I mean, you with your do you have an equivalent of a Wilson? What's your equivalent of Wilson out there on Jabari Parker Island?
I got a basketball. I love it's the one that Doug Tonis gave me. I love that basketball. I spent a lot of time with it, dribbling it, shooting it. So maybe that's my Wilson.
There you go.
Well, I talk to it occasionally.
I could definitely picture that. But look, you're a local Chicago hero too, Fred. So don't undersell yourself that. I know you're a very, very humble man, but you're a local Chicago hero too. So what I want to do now, whilst I've got you on the line. And I want to make this a regular thing, Fred, because I always love your stories. And I want to make a regular segment called Storytime with Fred Pfeiffer. So now that we're coming off that high of having Sylvie on the line, I want to hear maybe a good story that you have for me. And I just want to give you that chance to spruik something funny for me. So what do you got for me today on Storytime with Fred Pfeiffer?
So this is the first time I've ever shared this story. I've shared the story where I played with Jakeem Noah,
yeah,
basketball.
And that was a classic.
That was a classic. Well, there was an actual story earlier than that. 2002, in March 2002. Now, keep in mind what was going on then. That was the height of the Bulls, you know, probably Krause desperation. So they were doing a lot of unique things at the UC to get fans reengaged. And I was one of 21 lucky people to win a Nike Fantasy Camp experience. It was on the Bulls website. I applied for it and I won it. Couldn't believe it. It was a day at the United Center. You're going to get, they're going to give you shoes, Nike shoes, a uniform, and you get to play before a game. You get courtside seats to the game against, they played San Antonio that night in March of 2002 at the UC, and you get to bring one guest. So when I won it, I was in the office. I got the email. I started screaming, and you could tell people were like, what the heck is wrong with you? It's the Bulls, you know? So that kind of shows you how bad we were at that time and how low the love of the team was that I would win something like that. Anyhow, but I was excited because my wife, she was my fiance at the time. We were getting married in 2 months, never got a chance to see me at my athletic greatness, never got a chance to, but this time she was going to get to see it on the United Center court, me playing on a fantasy basketball game. So anyhow, we show up in about 2 hours early and there's nobody in the entire parking lot. The whole place is empty. So we had to wait for about an hour. Finally, a car shows up and the guy gets out. I swear, I thought it was Tyrone Corbin. He was probably about 6'8". It was amazing how tall this guy was. And he looked exactly like Tyrone Corbin. He wasn't Tyrone Corbin.
How tall are you, Fred?
I'm 6 foot. My wife looks over to me and goes, you're in trouble. I did not expect to see someone randomly win that who was 6'8". Anyhow, we go inside and they divide up the teams. Three of us, seven. It was so great to walk out in the United Center court, look around, and I get assigned to three Bulls come out, Eddie Curry, Jamal Crawford, and Tyson Chandler. And I'm on Jamal Crawford's team. And there's a little part where we work around, we talk to the players. I mean, it was the greatest. Those three were fantastic, absolutely fantastic kids. So I loved every minute of it. But the game starts, and the way they did it was they had they flipped coins. The two teams played each other, not my team, it was Eddie and Tyson's team, and the winner played our team. So I'm in the second team. We start the game. And actually, I actually asked to come off the bench because my strategy was 15-minute quarter, whoever wins is the champion. And I wanted to get these guys where they're a little bit tired, right? So I get out in the court. First time I get the ball, I pop a three at the top of the key, you know, a little bit higher than that, goes in, and I'm, you know, right away everybody's like, well, this guy can play. And I look over in the stands, and my fiance or wife now is reading a Cosmo. She wasn't watching. She was reading a magazine. I swear to God.
So maybe she was just taking Daniel's stats.
So I'm upset. Anyhow, but I'm tearing it up. I'm on a roll, 8 in a row. Then I get a steal. And we had a kid on our team who was mentally challenged. And immediately the whole place realizes I hand the ball to him. And everybody in the whole gym realizes, hey, this kid's going to do a layup, you know?
Yeah.
And the kid goes to do a layup, and the guy on the other team, I swear to God, runs and blocks the ball into the 10th row. And a fight like almost starts. I'm not kidding. Yeah. I lost it. So the bench is cleared and everybody, It was ridiculous that somebody would be that. But now I am so angry and I'm like, I'm going to take this team out. So I go on. Suddenly, I focused my anger. It was like I had all five stones in the infinity, and I am just playing out of my mind. I scored about 20 points in a period of about 6 minutes, just hitting shot after shot. Tyson Chandler was just like, did you play college? It was one of the greatest moments of my life, but I was starting to lose it a little bit, getting a little tired. Make a long story short, I get a wide open three with 4 seconds left in the corner, and we're down by two. And as I'm raising up, I'm thinking in my head, honestly, I'm thinking, man, I'm the greatest. All these thoughts are going to my head. I'm going to teach this team for what they did to my partner. I'm going to teach them what it's all about. And I shot an air ball. and time ran out.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And my wife, she said that was the only shot she saw me take the whole time. She was reading the magazine. She said, you didn't play well. I'm like, well, I didn't play well. I just scored I was fantastic. She said, no, I saw you. You missed that wide open three.
Oh, man. Shame it had to end that way because I was just about to queue up Chariots of Fire and just have that music in the background. But I'm not sure if it's relevant based on that short attempt.
If it was earlier than that, it would have gone right in. But I was so tired. I think that's what caused it. But I did think as I was rising up, those were the thoughts I had in my head. Man, am I the greatest in an airball?
Pretty sure they're the thoughts you have in your head just generally as you're strutting around town. I'd imagine too. Look, that was a great story and so great, Fred, that I want to do this every week. So every week, homework time from you. I want you to go deep into your memory bank and just come up with a story. It doesn't necessarily have to be related to basketball, but you know, if it relates to the Bulls, even better. But I think you've got a lot of stories. You've definitely told me a lot offline, but I think they're so good. I want you to share them with the audience. But that was an absolute ripper. Thanks for sharing that one, Fred.
Oh, no problem. The band was, that's the big story. I'll go into that deeply.
Oh, and I want to learn more about that.
I wrote two songs, one about Tom Thibodeau and Kirk Heinrich back in the day, and they're unreleased.
Wow. I mean, this is a perfect segue because, look, we've talked enough Bulls basketball. We had Sylvie on before. We talked plenty of Bulls. We didn't necessarily talk current day Bulls that much. We didn't necessarily go into game action or any of that minutia, but this is another thing I wanted to talk to you about is our bet. Now, we talked about this last time and the fact that we wanted to revise our bet a little bit, given that the Bulls have started slow here. They're 3-9. They've got the game against the Cavs. Hopefully that's a win, but we had the win total there set at 44 wins. If the Bulls go over, you win. If they go under, then I win. But given that the Bulls have started so poorly this season, we talked last time about revising the bet and maybe revising the term slightly, which means maybe we take that win total number down a little bit, and in turn, maybe we just change up what the terms of the bet are. But given all that, what are your thinking around that? And now that you've mentioned the fact that you have an unreleased song about Tibbs and Kirk Heinrich, I've been thinking that maybe if we revise the bet down to, say, 37 wins, that if that happens, because I'm being generous in allowing you to revise the bet down, that one, you have to wear that Heinrich jersey. That's not going anywhere.
I know. I'm looking at it right now as we're recording. I have it hanging up in my office. It's staring at me.
Beautiful. I'm glad to hear that. But beyond that, assuming we're pretty much double or nothing at this point. That's effectively what I'm saying here. Now, if I win, I want you to wear that Heinrich jersey. I want to see a photo of you in that Heinrich jersey on Twitter. But I also want to hear this Tibbs and Kirk Heinrich song. I need to hear it.
I'm going to show you one of those songs no matter what. Oh, I think the world needs it. I think the world needs to hear it. It's so... Both songs were very deeply emotional for me, so I know you're going to love it, especially the Heinrich one. Let's revise the bet. Can we come up with some better terms than that? Like,
well, I think that's great terms. I'll give you something else too. I'll wear that Valentine jersey, but I'll give you something else too. But we have to revise that number from 44. Let's call it. I mean, maybe 37 or 38. What do you reckon? I know you're still high on the team, so you can't come at me now and say 32 wins or something like that. I definitely tune into the Chicago Bullseye podcast, and I constantly hear you still very high on the team, so you can't back away too far.
Well, aren't you on the... I don't think I've asked you this question. Now that you've seen them, I mean, do you believe if they were healthy, what do you think their record would be right now?
I'd actually think it'd be pretty decent. Look, even with all these injuries, they haven't been far away in the last couple of games. And as I opened the show up, I mentioned that they had some pretty good performances against the Pacers and the Denver Nuggets. They obviously lost on the final possession there against the Nuggets. Obviously, even though they lost by 8 points against the Rockets, they were in the game. It was a decent game from a team missing four rotational players. So I think over the last week, or pretty much after that, just that embarrassing performance against the Golden State Warriors, the team has actually been okay. So I think if they had a full complement of players, they may have actually been somewhere around 500. So in saying that, whilst I'm not necessarily prepared to say they would end the season at 500, I thought they could have had a good chance here to be close to, you know, maybe not at 500, but, you know, maybe a game or two off it.
Yeah, that's the saddest thing about this is that my constant refrain of the seventh pick last year, seventh pick this year, seventh seed this season was robbed of me due to all these injuries, because it's clear they would have been the seventh seed, and it would have been so poetic and so great if that prophecy would have come true, but I wasn't unable to see their seven injuries. So what was your comment about my seven injuries yesterday? I got to admit, your joke qualities have really improved. You've had two in the last couple weeks where I've kind of had to put the phone down, and I admit that I've kind of chuckled. And one of them was the Jabari, your defense with Jabari Parker is better than Jabari's actual.
Well, look, I mean, you can't call yourself a Bulls prophet if you say you didn't foresee these four injuries plus three additional injuries that you're foreseeing now that are going to come our way. So you're probably the worst prophet going around, but you can't be sprouting yourself as a Bulls prophet here for it.
Well, I'll tell you one prophet, one prediction I was right on. How about that Wendell Carter Jr.?
Holy, he did get that one right.
My gosh, has he been something or what? So I had a tweet before we wrap this up. I got to ask you this because I've been dying to get your opinion on it. I had tweeted something to affect a poll out there saying if a core of LaVine, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr., let's say that's our core in 2 to 5 years, is that good enough with good role players around those three to win the title? Do you think that's possible, that they'll be a contender?
Maybe. They still need another perimeter player, and hopefully that comes in the form of a top draft pick here in this 2019 draft. Maybe not one of these Duke guys. I don't know if the Bulls will be bad enough to get a top three pick, but if they can land someone else who can contribute on the wing, whether it's a point guard or a small forward, I think if you add that player and that player, and if the Bulls can hit on a player of that sort of caliber, something similar to Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr., if they can hit on another player in three successive drafts and find another player there at, say, pick 7 or pick 8 or pick 9, that's where I'm assuming the Bulls will pick, then I think they have a decent chance here of being a pretty damn good team going forward, given the leap that Zach LaVine has made. I didn't necessarily see him doing it. I thought he had the potential to do it, but I didn't necessarily bank on it. But I love what I've seen from Wendell Carter Jr. I'm all in on that dude, and I'm extremely high on Lauri Markkanen too. So I can sort of see it, Fred, but I think they need one, maybe two more pieces, and then those role players to sort of fit in alongside of them.
See, I think that role player can be at the three and just be a 3-and-D guy.
Well, it could be like Chandler Hutchinson, right?
Chandler Hutchinson could be that guy, or it could be like a Trevor Ariza. That's not an A player, but he would fit in perfectly with what we have at the if LaVine, because you can't have four alphas, right? I mean, you got to have, you know, I kind of like think three is the max, and then have role players around those three. I just kind of come to the conclusion, it's just hit me in the face that with the jump that LaVine's taken, I think LaVine, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. could be enough in 3 years. And then you build around that. But we'll see, man. We'll see. I think they're going to be too good to get really high lottery pick, though, this year. When they come back, it's going to be very similar to last year. And think about it, we were 3-20. We were 3-20, Mark. We already got three wins.
That's true. We're only 11 in. But I mean, just how nice would a Cam Reddish or an RJ Barrett or even a Zion Williamson, how nice would they be on the perimeter right now? It's tough to dream about. I don't really want to see the Bulls tanking. I don't really want to be talking about tanking at this point. It may make sense from a when you think from your head, but my heart just can't handle that at the moment. So I don't really want to be talking tanking this early in the season, because that may be the case later on. But don't think I forgot about the bet here, Fred. You sort of diverted the topic, and I'm tipping you did that on purpose. So let's finalize it here, because I don't want to spend time next week talking about it either. So what are we setting at? 37 or 38 wins?
Let's go 37.
37 wins. All right. So 37 wins is the new over under. If I win the bet, you wear that Heinrich jersey, and then you release your Thibodeau and Heinrich song. And if for whatever reason, in the rare chance that you win the bet, I wear that Denzel Valentine jersey, but what's the other thing that I'm adding for you? What do you want?
Yeah, let me think about. Let's save that for next week. Maybe people reach out to me via email or on Twitter with your suggestions. I'll take them, and then we'll talk about it next week.
All right, cool. Well, we've got the important stuff down, the 37 wins. So we've revised that down to 37 wins. So that's the important part. But look, Fred, as I said, I appreciate you coming on. You're a local Chicago hero too. Never forget that, okay?
Okay, very local, like within about 30 square feet, but that's about it. But anyhow, I appreciate you saying that, Mark. Very enjoyable conversation with a hero of mine today, with Sylvie, and a very good friend in you.
It's good to hear. I'm glad you're part of it, and we'll talk again next week, Fred. Thanks for coming on.
Sounds good, brother. Great job, man.
Okay, Bulls fans, so that just about does us here for Bulls HQ this week. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was an awesome one to be part of for myself. Obviously, we had Sylvie on the line and had a great conversation with the guy who just loves this team. I think that was evident in listening to him talk to Fred and I today, and for him to take the time to speak to Fred and I really do appreciate it, as I do appreciate Fred jumping on the line every week as well. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this one. We'll be back again next week. In the meantime, follow the show on Twitter at BullsHQPod. Follow me on Twitter at MKHoops, and we'll catch you all again next week on Bulls HQ.